اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
اسمع
سورة الفاتحة.
اسمع why do you want this?
حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ألف لام ميم، أحسب الناس أن يتركوا أن يقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون. صلوات على محمد وآل
محمد.
The discussion we're having in these days of Muharram is regarding fitna. And the verse that I read for you, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that, does man think that they can get away with saying, I believe, and not be tested? Surely those before them have been tested, tried, and went through fitna. And they will also go through the fitna and the test and the trial. The trials, the sufferings, the hardship, the difficulties, misfortunes are going to come if you say that you believe. That is the price of faith. Those who believe in Allah, this is the price that they have to pay in this world. And hence Allah is the one who puts you through the test if you say that you believe. But as I explained yesterday, not all the tests that come upon people are from Allah. And yesterday I just mentioned one reason why these misfortunes come and why these difficulties and problems we face. And that is the sentence that Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, says in his dua. He says, Allahumma ghafir li adh-dhunub allati tunzilu al-bala. That Allah, forgive me of those sins that bring down misfortunes, that bring down problems. And hence we see that one of the reasons that these difficulties come and people, they go through sufferings, is not because Allah is testing them, it's because of their own sins and the outcome of their own actions. The question is that when Allah, He tries believers, why is He doing that? Why is He making people go through difficulties? How can you see a believer be poor and hungry for years upon years? How can he see, and why does he let an infant baby who is in pain, let him and see him go through that pain? Obviously, he is not having fun in watching this. It is not a sadistic view of inflicting pain on others and being cruel to others. This, we see that there are four reasons why this happens. There are four reasons why this happens. And one of them I explained yesterday, which is our own sins and our own doings. And inshallah, I'll explain these also as we go on. And then of course, the cure of how to solve these problems is also explained by Allah. That when you get difficulties and hardships and problems, how do you solve them? What is the way to get rid of them? Inshallah, because of the fact that, you know, we are going to be speaking about a lot of these hardships and pains and misfortunes that we face, and all human beings face, especially if they're mu'min, they face in life. So obviously, the thing is that, you know, it might become more depressing to see that when all these mountains of difficulties are being thrown at us, is there any way out for us? Is there any way out for us? Is there any hope for us? Is there a way to get out of it? Well, one of the solutions I will give today, right, so that when we leave the majlis, we don't leave it without having a solution in our hand of how to deal and how to get over the problems we face in this life. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
But obviously, once we understand the sufferings that we go through and the reasons for those sufferings, then these solutions will also become clear. And you will know what is the way to get out of this and how do you get out of this. This is something that you know. But one of the things that it must be in your mind, and that is that if you are a believer and if you say that you believe, there is no way but that you are going to go through difficulties and problems. And don't think that there are some who are not going through it. Because there are some people you will see that they're happy and content and they're so, you know, happy that, you know, you're thinking that, why is he so happy? You know, why is he so, you know, happy all the time and smiling all the time? You see, there, the fact is that if you see a person happy, you will see that he's also going through a trial by which he's not able to sleep at night. But there are certain reasons why people, they are happy and they don't let others know of their difficulties. You see, there are two reasons why people, they don't want to divulge the problems they're going through. One reason is that, obviously, they feel that it wouldn't be right for them to inform others, that they feel that it is beneath their respect to let others know of the problems they're going through. This is one reason they do that. Another reason is that they do not want to complain about Allah and what Allah is doing to them. If Allah is putting them through trials, they don't want to divulge that reason that, hey, listen, I'm going through these trials. And this is also where we see that Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam had said,
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
that he had said that whenever Allah he puts you through trials, do not mention these trials to others. Do not divulge them to others or reveal those things to others, the problems that you're going through. Because if you do, there are only two scenarios that could happen. Either the person that you are speaking to is your friend and he likes you. If he likes you and if you inform him of the problem that you're going through, then he also will be upset of your problem. And he will be upset and he will be anxious and he will also be worried and concerned. So why are you trying to upset him by informing him of the problem that you're going through or the trial that you're going through? Either this case. Or the second situation is that if he is your enemy, then why would you want to tell him anyway? Then he'll be happy at the fact that you're going through the suffering. You know, he'll be happy with that. So now, here we see that there are those people who they do not want to explain to others or they don't say to others. And you will see there are many people who do say. That, for example, you will see when a person, he goes through some hardship and difficulties, right? He will say, oh, you know what, I'm going through this and I have this and this is the problem I face, this is the problem I face. But there are those who don't go through that and they will not let others know of the problems that they're facing. And they will be smiling all the time. It is because Allah has given them a little bit more sabr than others. You know, He has given them a little bit more sabr against others. And that's the reason why we see that those who have sabr and those who have patience, they will be going through the difficulties in life and what they will face will be more than what others face. Because when these mu'mineen are doing their life and living their life for Allah, you will see that they are going through the hardships, but they will not be sad or they will not look upset or they will not even show any signs of them being distressed of these trials. Because they would feel that if they show these signs to the people, that they are complaining that Allah is doing this to them. You see, and this is the reason why we see that no one had faced the trials and the hardships that Imam Hussein did. But when Imam Hussein was seen in Karbala, he was seen smiling and he was seen happy in such a way that there was glow in his face. And no one had faced that many problems that he has done. But you see, the reason is because he knew that the trials are from Allah and that he wanted everyone to know that he's happy with whatever Allah is giving him. With whatever Allah is giving him. This is the attitude that one wants to have in any trial that one goes through. Whenever you see that you have to go through a trial, then you know that you have to exclude those things. Because at first you should always, and always, like I mentioned yesterday, I said that there are those people that whenever any hardships come to them, they say Allah is doing this for them. Well, instead of saying Allah is doing this for them, and the reason they say that is because Allah says that He only gives hardships to believers and trials to believers. So they want to label themselves as a mu'min by saying that Allah is trying them. So whenever you go through trials, you should say, at first you should say that this is because of my own sins that this is happening. This is because of my own doings that this is happening. This is the first thing you should say. That this is because of me. I'm the one responsible for this. Right? And then you look at yourself and see, are you doing those sins that bring down those misfortunes? And if you are, then that's one thing. And I'll mention, because I mentioned four of them yesterday. If you remember from yesterday what those four were. Right? Those four were. First one was what? Right, that if you see someone in need and if you ignore him, then Allah will send misfortunes on you. And He will stop your risk. If you see an oppressed person, number two, if you see an oppressed person, and if you do not aid him to whatever extent that you can, then if you ignore him, then that also brings down misfortune in your life. If you don't do Amr bil Ma'ruf, you see that you will not be helped by Allah and there will be misfortunes in your life. Or number four is Nahi anil Munkar. So I classify them into four. And I'll mention more inshallah as we go along. But the thing that you need to recognize is that if there are people you see who are happy and content in their lives, it's because of two reasons. Either they don't speak of their misfortunes, or they don't reveal their difficulties to others. The second reason why you see people happy and content is that they don't have any trials. I mean, you will see people who are happy, who are leading nice lives, they have achieved their American dream, and life is good for them. Right? I mean, life is really good for them, you know. They're so happy they even have pets. You know, and they look after that. I mean, they're so happy. But so the issue is that you look at these people, why is it that all the problems are on me, and all the problems are on us, and these people are so happy, and these people are there. So obviously, you'll see that maybe they're not going through trials. Maybe they're not going through trials. And you see that there was one person who came to the Imam and said, you know, I know this person, and he's happy, and his life is so good. He's always happy, and you see that there's no hardships he goes through, no difficulties he goes through. So obviously, you see, in the eyes of the world, this is a good life. Right? In the eyes of the world, this is a fulfilling life. That your life is fulfilling, that you have achieved the happiness, and you have achieved that state of being where you are not in real difficulties, and your life is easy. So he came and he told the Imam, look, this person is so good and his life is so good. Why is it that, you know, we mu'mineen have to go through all this garbage? Right? And we are the ones in these hardships and difficulties. Why is it that we are the ones in these problems? So what do you say about that person? So the Imam says, mal'unun mal'unun. Cursed is he and cursed is he. Cursed is the one who goes through life. I mean, 40 days Imam mentioned. 40 days he lives and Allah does not try him. If Allah is not trying him at least once in every 40 days, then he is cursed by Allah. Because one of the signs of someone who is beloved of Allah is that he puts them to trials. He shows fitna, he gives fitna to them, he tries them. This is the sign of someone who is beloved of Allah. And the more beloved you become, the more Allah likes you, the more he puts you through trials. You see, the more he puts you through trials. You know, Ibrahim was the Khalil of Allah, the friend of Allah. And you see, Allah's friend, meaning in reality he was Allah's friend. It's not like how we have friends, you know, he's my friend, you know. No, what it means friends is that you really care. There's true love and bond between the two. There was a true bonding. Ibrahim loved Allah and Allah loved Ibrahim. You know, to such an extent that you see that Ibrahim was so liked by Allah that he wanted Ibrahim and his faith to be remembered by all of mankind. You see, how much he loved him. But then, being a friend, what did he ask him to do? You see, what did he ask him to do? He asked him to sacrifice the one that he loved the most, in the sense, in the world. The son that he had The son that he had no other son. He's an old man. This is the only son he has. This is his progeny. This is the person who's going to be his heir and everything. And as a friend, what did he ask him to do? He said, give me that one. Give me that one. I mean, if he asked for a wife, he had two wives. It would have been easier, right? But you see that he asked for the only one. You know, his only son. Now as a friend, he's asking for him, and you see that as a friend, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Why are you asking for that? We also believe in Allah. We are all Muslims. And how many Muslims have lived? You know, billions and billions of Muslims have lived. Has he asked any Muslim to do that? Has he asked any one of you? He didn't ask us to do it. He just asked us for 5 prayers a day. 1 month of fasting a year. And 1/5 of our savings, not even our income.
Wow.
You know, 1/5 of our savings, not even our income. He says, keep your income. Out of the savings, give me 1/5. See, that's all he's asking us for, right? But when Ibrahim became his friend, he said, now I want your son. You see, the more beloved you become of Allah, the more Allah loves you, the more He is demanding of you. This is the nature of Allah's love in this dunya. The more He is demanding of you. And why also hear that out so that you understand this, my friends. Right? I'll give you another example also, you know, so that this other example can also be in your mind and you know this example, but this will help you also to understand this situation. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala
Muhammad.
You know, Imam Ali alayhi salam had salawat ala Muhammad wa ala
Muhammad.
Had a few brothers, and all of them were dead except for Aqil. Right? All they were dead except for Aqil. Talib, who was his oldest brother, had died. Jafar also died. Jafar also died. And now Aqil is the only brother that he had, and he's older than him. Right? He's much older than him by 20 years. He's older. And you see that Imam Ali is the ruler of the land. He's a Khalifa. Right? And the Baytul Mal or the money of the state is in his hands. Right? In his hands. He's the one who's giving out. No one is questioning him. Right? There's no, for example, association or someone else, board of directors, you know, overlooking him. This is an Islamic state still. Right? And he is in charge, right? So, he has the Baytul Mal in his hand. Right? He has it in his hand. And no one is asking him for anything or checking anything or doing anything. And this old brother of his who was blind also and is very poor and is in need comes to him and asks him for an advance on his paycheck. I mean, he didn't ask for some money under the table. You know, he didn't ask for something haram or something that's not there. He asked for, hey, the money that you owe me, I need it right now that you have to pay next month. So if you can give me an advance on that, I have some bills to pay. My children are hungry. Right? So you see, this is Imam Ali's brother. And he loves him. He loves him, but you see, his love dictates to him that, you know, he's asking for money. So what do? I burn his hand. The same hand he is spreading in front of me as a brother. And he's saying that, please give me some money. He's raising his hand, asking for help from the Baitul Mal. And Imam Ali puts a coal in his hand, a hot coal. Burns his hand. Right? He says, what are you doing? You burned my hand. Now friends, understand again. You know? And if anyone says that this was cruel, if anyone says that this was cruel, then this was less than what Allah asked Ibrahim to do. This was much less than what Allah had asked Ibrahim to do. He asked him to give his only son. You see, he asked him to give his only son. And to Aqil's credit, really, he did give all his children in the way of Allah. Now, all his children were given in the way of Allah. You know, his were the most children who died with Imam Hussein. You understand that? That's what, obviously he's a mu'min, and that shows also. So now you see, with this, we can understand that the nature of Allah's love is that he wants, the closer you get to him, the more he demands of you. The more he wants you to sacrifice. And his asking you depends on your faith and your love of him. The more you love him, the more you will see that Allah will ask you to sacrifice. Allah will ask you to give. And the reason, my friends, is this. When you love someone, obviously, when you love someone more, you want to give him more. Understand why Allah is doing this. Why is this the nature of Allah's love? It's because when you love someone more, you want to give him more. You see, for example, if I love my son, then I'm going to go and buy him a, you know, for example, PS3. It's $300. That's a lot of money for me. For some it might not be. For me it's a lot. So now, I love him, so he wants it, I buy it. Let's say. But, you know, for an outsider who asks for help, you know, I will give him probably $100 or $50 or $10. Right? And some people, you know, will say, hey, listen, I don't have money. Right? The issue is that you will give less to outside. When you come closer, then you will give more. And you want to give more. You want to give more than this. Right? You want to give more than this. But what's stopping you is that you cannot. Because I don't have the money to give. You know? Like for example, if you love your wife, you'll say, I'll give the world to you. What? But obviously, what you give her is a ring. And you wouldn't even tell her where you bought it. You wouldn't tell her. Why? The issue is that that's all you can afford. That's all you gave to her. But you see, this is Allah who doesn't have any limitations on what he can give. When he loves someone more, he wants to give them more. And because he wants to give them more, he knows the only way for them to get it. The only way for them to receive what Allah wants them to give is to be prepared for that. Is to be ready for that. If you're not ready for it, how can you get it? My friends, understand this. If you give a fool $1 million, he won't know what to do with it. Even know what, where to start doing with this. You see, to him, 1,000 is too much. If you give him $1 billion, he doesn't know what to do with it. What do I do with this? Right? He won't know. He would squander it. In order to receive, you must be prepared also. And in order for you to get prepared, that's why Allah is saying, the more you sacrifice in dunya, you will be prepared in the akhirah to receive it. Salawat ala Muhammad. One more salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
My friends, so here we understand that everyone faces difficulties. If you're a mu'min, you're going to face sufferings. There's no way out of it. You're going to face it. And the extent you are facing to is because of the faith that you have. That is there. So now here, before we go more into misfortunes and hardships and sufferings, just one cure I want to give right now so that you understand and hopefully leave here on how to stop these sufferings from coming or how to handle these sufferings and these adversities that we face. There's also ways of dealing with this, and Allah has mentioned that. And the one way of dealing with this is dua. Yes, dua is one way of dealing with this. But sometimes what happens, and you know, dua is a blessing that really we do not understand the potency of this blessing that we have. Really don't understand what it stands for. And there are those, alhamdulillah, amongst us, you know, who read duas and they are ahle dua. They make duas and they do duas. They are involved in duas and they make duas. And you will see they will be asking for duas. Whenever the Mawlana come, they say, Mawlana, do you have a dua for this? A dua with dua for that? Right. So obviously, you know, they're asking for these duas. And the problem that they have is the fact that, you know, when we mention them the duas that they read every week, they say, well, everyone has this dua. I need something rare. You know, something special, you know. No one has it but me, you know. Why don't you take this dua out of some hidden book somewhere, you know, like you can take this dua and say, this is the dua. Right? This is what happened. The dua, they say, well, you know, why don't you read Dua-i Mashlool? All the children read Dua-i Mashlool. Okay, why don't you read like Dua-i Humail? Everyone reads that. You know? And the thing is that they want these duas that are so special and so strong and so hidden that no one knows them, and they think that if they have it that they're going to use it. And what they don't understand is that the dua that is right in front of them is the best dua that there could be. And we see that. And when we give them that, they say, what do you mean this? Everyone does this. Right? Everyone does that. This happens. Yeah, this is the nature of man that, you know, when he thinks when something is done by everyone, you know, it's commonplace, they think that it's not worth that much because everyone does it, right? And the thing is that they don't understand that this might be the best one. This dua that we have might be the best one. This dua might be the key. This dua might be the thing, but and you see that it happens. Sometimes this, and this nature also is in sins and good deeds also. You see that people, they do sins and they're worried about those sins that they don't do. Right? Say, listen, you know, for example, here you see this one person doesn't drink alcohol, he doesn't eat haram food, but he does ghibat. And all his concern is, look at these people eating haram meat and alcohol. You're doing ribat. But you know, this is alcohol, at least not alcohol. The issue is that, you know, to him, the sin that should be the most important is the one that he's doing. You see, the sin that you're doing, that's the most important for you. Not the sin that others are doing, and you are not. You know, all these sins are there, and you see, we are worried about those sins that others are doing and not us. Something that's right in front of us, we don't care or we ignore it. And we're always looking for faraway things to give importance to. And good deeds also, this is the same way. Right? We do good deeds, and we see we do all kinds of great deeds, but the thing is that the good deed that we need to do is right in front of us. You know, let me give you an example to explain that if you send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
You know, in the time of Bani Israel, there was this woman whose husband had died. And obviously, she loved him very much. You know, in those days, relationship between husband and wife used to be such that they would be devoted to one another. Right? And so what happened is that when he died, she wanted to do something for him. He wanted to do something for him. Right? He's dead, you know, and I want to do something for him. And they had one son. And what he used to do, what she used to do is that, because she was not rich, she didn't have a lot of means. So what she used to do is that she used to make a plate of food every week. Every Thursday she would, maybe like Friday she would make a plate of food. And she would look for someone needy to give that food in the name of her husband. Now in order to get that plate of food, she and her son used to fast in order to save up for that, so that this reward can go to her husband. And every week she used to send this food to the place of worship, wherever it was, with her son, that go and look for someone who's in need and give this food there. And the son would go there and give the food all the time. You know? Every week it happened, and she was doing it and hoping that, you know, inshallah, the reward will reach him and that she can help him, that he will be rewarded. And one day, you know, she gave the food and the son, he came back. He came back with a plate and, you know, she washed up and this and that. And that night she had a dream. And in the dream the husband came. And she saw the husband and she was very pleased to see him. And the husband also was looking very happy. And he said that, I came this week to thank you that the reward you sent me has reached me today. The reward you sent me has reached me today. I want to thank you for the reward that you sent me. And, you know, and so she was happy, oh, that was good, you know, the reward reached you, this and that. I've been doing this so long. He says, well, you know, I mean, all this while I was in very hard times. I've seen that the what the prophets have said is true, that the grave is a very hard place and the punishment of the grave is very difficult. But today you have done something to relieve me of that. The difficulties that I was going through in the grave have been revealed because of what you have done today. He said, but I was doing this every week. He says, I don't know about the other weeks, but this was the week that it helped me. Right, I wouldn't help any time before this. This was the time he helped me. And so she saw the dream and, you know, she woke up and she was like crying. At the same time she was happy that her husband is happy, but she was crying, but she was puzzled also as to, you know, what happened today. Maybe my son gave it to someone who's very holy and a real mu'min, and that helped my husband. And I need to now give food to him in order to make him, you know, I mean, make the reward reach my husband. So with that, she came to her son and woke him up. And he just woke up and said, son, listen, who did you give the food to last night? Who did you give the food to last night? And the son was a little bit shocked. A little bit shocked. He says, mother, I'm sorry. He says, no, I just want to know who you gave the food to. He said, listen, how did you know about this? He says, no, I just want to know who you gave the food to. That's all I want to know. Why? What happened? He said, you know, every week I used to take the food and I used to give it. And you know what? Many days I'm hungry, but yesterday I couldn't handle it. I ate the food. You know, I ate the food. And she was like shocked, you ate the food. And she went to the prophet of the time. She asked him, what's going on? This is what happened. My husband came in the dream. He says, this is the way it is with Allah. Allah does not accept that charity that if your orphan son is hungry at home and you're giving somewhere else. When your own children are hungry and you're giving somewhere else, that's not charity. This is where it starts. First you feed them. This is what was needed. And now you did that, you see that reward reach the husband. You see, that reward of that child reached the husband. My friends, sometimes it does happen that we see things are right in front of us. The deeds are right there and we don't see them. We want to now make a masjid. You know, and we want to do this Islamic revolution or have an Islamic republic. The deed starts right here first. My friends, the Islamic republic starts right here. You know? The Islamic State starts right here. This is where it starts. You know, not there. That's only a dream. This is where the reality is. This is where it starts. Right in front of us. And we see that's where it counts when you do Islam, when you do the deed for that. This is the nature of man, that he sees something in front of him and he thinks that this is nothing. This is nothing, you know, and you know. And he's always looking for something that's far away. So in du'as, this is the same case. When we speak of du'as, this is the same case. And we see that everyone's looking for this secret du'a that has Ismay Azam in it and the great name of Allah in it, so that when I read it, I'm going to fly. And the du'a that can really make you fly is right in front of you. That everyone knows and you, that you do every day. My friend, understand this. This is something that we don't understand. Now what is that du'a? Right? What is that du'a? We see this. Allah mentions this in Surah Jummah. In Surah Jummah, Allah mentions this. He says, فَإِذَا قُضِيَتِ الصَّلَاةُ فَانْتَشِرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ وَابْتَغُوا مِنْ فَضْلِ اللَّهِ وَاذْكُرُوا اللَّهَ كَثِيرًا لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ. He said that after you make the Friday prayer, you go forward. Go on the land. Seek Allah's grace. And remember Allah a lot. Do dhikr a lot. Do a lot of dhikr. When you do a lot of dhikr, then Allah is going to make you successful in the dunya and in the akhirat. Now here, dhikr kathir is a secret. Dhikr kathir. What is dhikr kathir? Remember Allah a lot. Now whenever a lot comes, you know, there is an issue and an ambiguity and confusion with a lot. What does Allah mean by a lot? You know, is 1 million a lot? 100,000 a lot? How much is a lot? This word kathir. Every place it came in the Quran, it is confusing. Because really, when Allah says a lot, what do we mean by a lot? You know, obviously He says, Inna atayna kal kawthar, I gave you a lot. So when He gave the messenger a lot, it meant really a lot. And that was Fatima alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Now when He's asking us for a lot, we cannot give Fatima.
That's right.
We cannot do that much. So what does He mean by a lot here now? You see, again, what is the meaning of this a lot? This is what we need to understand. He says, if you do dhikr of Allah a lot, then you will be successful in this dunya and in the akhirat. You'll be successful. Dhikr kaseer, what is this? So now, to make you understand that, I'll give you an example. To make you understand what this Allah means and how this is meant. Mutawakkil was the ruler of the time in the time of Imam Hadi alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
And once he fell ill and he was very sick. And obviously he is cursed. And he fell sick and he was ill. While he was ill, he made an oath. He said, if I get well, I'm going to give a lot of money in Allah's way. He made an oath. I'll give a lot of money if Allah makes me well. So he became well. Now the confusion was, okay, what is the meaning of a lot? What is the meaning of a lot here? Yeah, really, what do you mean a lot? You know, so now I was confused. He said, listen, I made the oath when I needed to. Now when it came, not give up all my wealth. I can't give it up. So what does that mean now, a lot? So he went to the court and all the ulama were there, the Hanafi, Hanbali, all these alims are there. And he asked them, hey, listen, what is the meaning of a lot? They said, well, you know, we don't know. What intention did you have? You know, we're here to receive, you know. You know, we call them a corporate ulama. You know, I'm all ready to get, you know. They're in the business. So the issue is that they didn't know. They said, we don't know. He said, yeah, but I need to do this. Otherwise, I made this oath. I don't want to go back on my oath, you know. This and that. So he said, all right, you know. So obviously, you know, the issue ended up with Imam Hadi alayhi salam. Really, the reality is that, you know, the imams are there and you see that they are giving the blessings to everyone, but yet they're not recognized. This is always the case. Right? Even right now, when they have mentioned about the imam of the time, they say that the imam of the time is like the sun with the earth. It gives blessings even though it's hidden behind the clouds. You can't see it, but it's still giving the blessings. You know? And hence you see that here Imam Hadi was there. And he came and they asked him, what is the meaning of a lot? This is the oath I made and, you know, I said a lot. So, what does that mean? He said, 80 dirham. What? 80 dirham? Like randomly, 80 dirham, that's it, but that's not a lot. He said, read what Allah says in the Quran. He says, وَلَقَدْ نَصَرُكُمْ فِي مَوَاتِنِ الْأَثِيرَةِ. We have helped you, O Prophet, in many places. In many places we have helped you. In a lot of places we have helped you. And on the day of Hunayn we have helped you. On the day of Hunayn, we have helped you. We have helped you in many places, also in a lot of places. So he says, now you count how many wars the Prophet went through. There are 80 wars. It means Allah is saying a lot to 80. Salawat ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Ali. Nare Hadri. So Malik Kathir, a lot of wealth, was defined as 80 dirham. But this is dhikr kathir. A lot of dhikr. What is this defined as? You see, we need to know what a lot is. And that's where the Imam said that this dhikr kathir that Allah has mentioned in the Quran is 100. This is the tasbih of our grandmother Fatima Tuzan. Understand that. He said that this dhikr kaseer Allah is saying, if you do this, then you will be successful in the dunya and akhirat. Is reading 34 times Allahu Akbar, 33 times Alhamdulillah, 33 times Subhanallah, and you will see that you will be successful in the dunya and the akhirat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Now understand this. This tasbih of Fatima, this is right in front of us, and we ignore this and look for those du'as that have this. But understand the power that Allah has put in this du'a. This tasbih is a du'a. But we see that we don't use it as a du'a, we use it as tasbih. After prayer, it is recommended to read, we say that. But you see, this is used as a du'a. This is used as a du'a, and we see how it has been used. And what is the potency of this? Right? Three hadiths I have here that speaks about this. And we see that the first hadith is by Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
And he said the first thing that this tasbih is used for. He said that if you read this tasbih of my grandmother, then Allah is going to forgive your sins. Your sins are forgiven by reading the tasbih of Fatima. Right? This is the first. The second one. The second thing that comes out of this. Out of this. Is that the same Imam had said that reciting the tasbih of my grandmother drives away shaitan. It is a protection against shaitan and makes the results in satisfaction of Allah. Meaning whatever you are doing, Allah will be satisfied with it. If you read this, it's tasbih. And the third one, that is from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
And this is where I want to come to so that you understand why I mentioned this. That he had said that if you read this tasbih regularly and often, then you will not encounter any adversity in your life. This is that protection against adversities and misfortunes. Misfortunes that are that drive you away from Islam. That lessen the love of Allah in your heart. You know, because again, you know, we will speak more about misfortunes and how this happens. But understand that when this was given to Fatima, when this was given to Fatima, you see the way in which Rasulullah gave it. You know, he said, when she asked for something from him, he said that I'm giving you something that is superior to everything in this world and in the hereafter. Everything in this dunya, whatever this dunya can be, this is more superior to this. What is that? He gave her the tasbih and said, this is the tasbih. And she loved, she was young. It was like a toy that you give a child. The toy of Fatima, obviously it's not the toy that we give our children. This is our marifat and the children of our marifat. That was the Prophet's marifat and the marifat of Fatima. That she gave the tasbih, that he gave the tasbih to her, and that tasbih she used so much that Allah wanted to put that power in that tasbih. And said that whoever does this, maybe just in the remembrance of Fatima. You know, this is what it is. Dhikr kathir is the tasbih of Fatima. Remembering Allah a lot is the dhikr of tasbih of Fatima. My friends, this is dhikr kathir. And one more thing I will just add so that you know. When we see a lot of wealth, Imam said it's 80. When they said a lot of dhikr, the Imam mentioned it's 100. And when you see and you want to hear a lot of believers, then I will say it is 72. Oh. 72 with a lot of believers. Really, 72 with a lot of believers to have. You know, when you want a lot of believers, this is the number you need to count. Because that was enough to change the tide of this dunya. That was enough. You know what Imam Hussein had did? He brought out this oil, this ithr that is used. The ithr that is used and this oil that the incense oil that is used. He brought that ithr of humanity to Karbala.
Oh, shame.
You know, and what I mean by that is that, you know how many flowers it takes to make ithr? Small amount of ithr? It takes a lot of flowers in order to make a small amount of ithr to come out of it. And all of that he brought out. From all these people he brought out 72. This was the ithr, the perfume, that incense of humanity. Really, that was the incense of humanity that he brought out. My friends, this is the third night of Muharram. Second just passed. It was on the second day, around evening time, that Imam Hussein reached this destined land. He reached this destined land. You know, how many years did Karbala wait for Imam Hussein to come? You know, when I go for Hajj, and I go to the land of Makkah and I see the house of Allah and I see the land of Arafat. You know, the greatness of this land is not in the structures or the buildings. In fact, it is very arid land, very, you know, it's not a handsome land. It is very arid, it's very dry. Something like that. When I look at it and I mention, but that aura that comes from it is because of this history of the Anbiya that came there, Ibrahim, looking at the Prophet born there, and you see that aura of this land comes out and you see why this is great. The land is great. Right? Because of the people that stood on it. Because of the people that walked on it. That land is great because it can truly testify to a believer walking on his back. You know? And just imagine the history of this land of Karbala. Since the beginning that man came here, how many prophets walked through the land of Karbala? How many Anbiya came there and stopped there and wept? How long was Karbala waiting for Hussein to come on it? How long was it waiting for Imam Hussein to come on it so that when Imam Hussein did come, you see what happened. Imam Hussein was riding his horse and his horse stopped. His horse stopped, so he got off the horse and he wanted to try another horse. And he said, move. The horse wouldn't move. And he wanted to make it clear for others, everyone around him, to see what's going on. Why is the horse not moving? You know, because such a dry and desolate land that has no growth or nothing, it's eerie when you're there. He says, to explain to them why we are stopping here. He changed 7 horses, but they won't change, but they won't move. And then he said, what is the name of this place? What is the name of this place? Imam Hussein knew the name, he knew where he is, but he wanted others to know also so that he's their leader. He's leading them and he wants them to be with him in his marifat, and he wants their marifat to grow. And he says, what is the name of this land? Someone, they came and said that the name of this land is Nainawa. Someone else came and, you know, he said, no, there's another name for it. And there's another person who came and said, this is called Shattul Furat also. He said, no, there's another name for it. And another person came and said, this is called Dashtibala. And then we said, no, there's another name for it. And one old person, he was very old, he came forward and he says, you know, I heard that our grandparents and, you know, my ancestors, they used to call this land Karbala. Karbun wa bala means the land of difficulty and hardship. The land of suffering. You know, the land was given this name by the Anbiya. They gave this name to this land because of what is going to happen here. They knew it and they were expecting this. Imam Hussein, as soon as he heard the name, he said, Abbas, we are going to camp here. This is where we are going to camp. And he brought everyone and everyone started to unload their tents and they're going to pitch their tents and everyone started and Imam Hussein's tent was pitched. And a small stool was put outside the door of that tent and Imam Hussein sat at the door. The neighboring tribe was known as Bani Asad. They had also come to see these people who have come here to this place. And they also, as they were there around him, there was an audience now. And he said, who is the owner of this land? Who is the owner of this land? And they said that, you know, this land, you know, I mean, we have lived here for the longest time. He says, I want to buy this land from you. I want to buy this land from you. That is here, right here. He says, you know, and this is not your fertile land. This is not the land that you grow agriculture on or that you make use of. This land has no growth in it. I just want this piece right here. They said, well, you know, I mean, if you want to stay here, you're welcome to. We're not going to take any. No, he said, no, I want to pay you for this. And he gave them the money. He said, this is the money. He gave them the money. And as soon as he gave them the money, now he said, now I want to give this land back to you. Know that I bought this land from you. Now I want to give it back to you. I want to give it back to you. He said, but, you know, he said, but with three conditions. He said, but three conditions. I want you to take this land. Three conditions. And they said, whatever, Yabna Rasulullah, whatever you say, we will do that. And he addressed them and said, listen, all I want you to do is these three things. He said, 8 days later, you will see some dead bodies lying here. You'll see some dead bodies lying here. Just make a grave for them. That's all I ask you. Just make a grave for them. He said, the second condition is that if someone loses his way looking for a grave, just tell them this is our grave. Just show them this is our grave. My friends, Imam Hussein has become such a stranger in the land of his grandfather. In the land of the Muslims, he has become such a stranger that he has that the Bedouins have to now show the Muslims where the grave of the grandson of the Prophet is. Imam Hussein now said the third condition is that if someone comes to visit our grave, then I ask you at least for 3 days, take care of him. Take care of him 3 days. With these three conditions, he says here, take this land from me. The men, they were like looking down and they didn't know. And the old person who had informed the Imam Hussein about the name of the land, he came forward and said, "Master, I ask you, Ibn Rasulullah, I ask you that do not get this land, because this land has never been good to any prophet that came here. Every prophet that came here was met with misfortune." Imam Hussein said, "You don't know what is going to happen on this land. You don't know what is going to happen on this land." He looked at the men, and the men were looking down. The men were looking down, and then you know what Imam Hussein did? Just imagine the actions and the wisdom of Imam Hussein and the foresight of Imam Hussein, how he's thinking and how he works. Imam Hussein looked at the men, and on the other side he saw the women who were standing there who came with their husbands. They came to visit the grandson of the Prophet. When they came there, he went to the woman and said that, he went to them and said, "My sisters, I want to give you a wasiyat also. I want to give you a will and advice also, if you can do this for me. You know, I'm the grandson of the Prophet. Would you do this for the grandson of your Prophet?" They said, "What is that? We will do anything for you." He said, "If your husbands are scared to come and make grave for us, then make the excuse that you're getting water from the river and put a cloth on our bodies." When he was done with the ladies, when he was done with the sisters, now he saw the little children who came with them who were playing. And he went to them. He went to them. He gathered them. "Children, come here. Come here." And playfully he got on his knees with them. And he said, "My children, do you know, after some days, there will be some bodies over here. If you see that your parents do not come and do anything, come out here and play in this field. Don't worry, play in this field. And while you're praying, take some sand in your hand and put it on our bodies." What can I say, my friends? Karbala has greeted Imam Hussein. Karbala has greeted Imam Hussein. Karbala is now saying to Imam Hussein, "Welcome. This is going to be your home. This is going to be the place where you stay. This is going to be the place you'll be slaughtered." On the 11th of Ashura, on the 11th of Muharram, when the day came and the army left, you see the bodies were lying on the ground. And these bodies were lying on the ground. And the Bani Asad, the tribe, came out after they saw the army leave. They came out and they wanted to make the graves. And they started to say, "Well, how are we going to know whose grave is what?" Because you know, when they came out, what they saw, they wouldn't realize. Imam Hussein had came there 8 days before. But now he and his family, his companions, were lying on the battlefield of Karbala in such a way that their heads were slaughtered. Their heads are slaughtered. Someone's arms are slaughtered. Someone has spears in his heart. Someone has so many injuries. Now they looked at them. He said, "We don't know whose body is what. How are we going to put these bodies away? We don't know what's going on." And they looked at these bodies. They said, "We can make the grave, but who knows which grave is what?" And then they saw someone riding from Kufa. And then that person, "Look, someone is coming. The army people are coming." They got scared and there was fear in their hearts. But they saw a person riding towards them. And when the person came towards them, he said, "What are you worried about?" He said, "Well, we thought you were the army." He said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "Well, we are here to put these graves in. And we don't know whose grave belongs to which. We don't know what signs to put on their heads." So now that person said, "I will tell you that. This is the grave of Ali Akbar. Akbar, this is the grave of Qasim, this is the grave of Abbas, and you know out there by the river is the grave of Abbas. They asked him, how do you know this? He said, you know, how can I not know? I'm the Imam of the time. يعلم الذين ظلموا أي من قلب ينقلب فاطمة حسين
يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين.